Hello, I'm Jerry Wilgoose, Esquire.
And I'm Rigglesworth.
I think if you were going to play a sort of public service broadcasting bad interview bingo, you'd have like, what comes first, the music or the you know, the archive? How do you write your songs? How did you meet? You know, how did you start doing? Why did you start doing this? Are you really into history? Where do you go next with it? It's a good concept. Well, it's an average concept, but where do you go next with it? That's just off the top of my head.
I love the "where do you go next with it," because I saw that a bunch of times and I was trying to figure out how to do something different with that, and I think I have the answer. I don't think it has to go anywhere next, because you're making music, and then you've chosen to do interesting samples. That could go on for the rest of your life when you come right down to it, because there's a million levels. And I know people also say, well, are you going to go from the 18th century to the 21st century? Are you going to go from stoves to microwaves? This is a really kind of interesting thing that I did hear in other interviews, that one of the great reasons for what you're doing is it saves this worthless conversation with the audience, like, hello, San Francisco. And I think that's really, if you were looking for an excuse to do this, even if it wasn't really cool, and you didn't have a passion for all this interesting stuff, just avoiding doing that would be worth the price of admission alone, wouldn't it?
It's something that we do that does get, it gets mentioned in almost every review that you know, of our live show that we do. I think it's quite a clever and a funny way of kind of sending up the typical sort of interaction between a band and the crowd. And you know, it's not done in a kind of super sarcastic and ironic and overly arch and knowing way. It is done, you know, for the intent and purpose of generating some warmth between us and the audience, but not doing it in the kind of the typical way, I suppose.
Okay, but let's go down that road, because one of the things that you do get asked a lot, is this a serious, I'll do it in the full announcer voice, is this a serious effort, or are you just playing with people? And as I was listening on the way here to Roy G. Biv, as I was listening to the fashion thing, you know, and that's when I started laughing.
I'm glad you recognize, you know, that there is a lot of humor in there. I think we have touched on some sort of more serious issues, and what you don't want to let happen is let yourself kind of go down the sort of everything's from an ironic and slightly sort of tongue-in-cheek perspective. You know, you do need to leave room for some sincerity and some sort of genuine sort of sensitivity to the material that you're using, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, some of the stuff like you just mentioned, and even my favorite sort of comical quote is the Signal 30 one, no drinking and driving, and somebody else like, not even beer, as if that's a legitimate question.
And so it's not about how do you write it, it's that you're writing it, if I'm correct, to fit a narrative in the story you're trying to tell through the pieces you're using here.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, actually. And it's a very good way of putting it that I may steal for every interview from now.
That'll be $5, please. That'll be £12, $5.
See, that's the thing about stealing, you know,
it's okay.
And I think that's the sort of the true answer to the question, what comes first? It's not either the music or the film. What comes first is the kind of the story or the subject that you want to talk about. Yeah. And then it's either a case of you've already got something musically that you think will fit that, or you've already seen something that you think will tell that story, or you have to go out and find one or the other or both and then put them together.
And the voice, we're never going to find out who the voice is. The voice is a mystery.
The voice is a mystery, yeah. The entity behind the voice kind of brought that personality to it themselves. I give them a kind of brief. There's some that I do want them to sound reasonably sincere for. He's a very funny guy, so he does his own thing.
Hearing this on the radio versus hearing and seeing it live, and there are definitely some bands that you are perfectly content to hear it on the radio, and when you see it live, it's the same show. There is no question that when you see this live, there's a not even a second dimension, there's a third dimension, and I'm not talking 3D like bad movies. This thing was built for live more so than recording, wasn't it?
Well, actually, funnily enough, no. I mean, it started off like, I guess, a number of musical, some more bonkers musical ideas. It started off, you know, as a sort of bedroom recording type thing. And the challenge was, you know, I was speaking to my missus, and she was saying, oh, do you think you could ever do this live? And I was like, no, I couldn't do this live. How could I ever do this live? What are you talking about? Actually, could I do this live? You know, and that sort of set the whole chain in motion of working out how to do it. And it's really, you know, it has taken about 3 or 4 years, I suppose, to get to the point where it's evolved to the level where I know what I'm doing musically. We've added drums, like live drums, to the mix, which, you know, again, is another level to it. And then, of course, you've got the sort of various levels of complexity of visuals that you can kind of stack on top of that. So it's not like the live concept came first and then, you know, the songwriting came underneath it. It was more like I just started doing this and then had to work out, you know, kind of along the way how to take it into the live sphere. But with some very clear ideas about how I wanted it to work still.
But this is where it does get complex. And back to the stealing, which I know is not relevant, but samples are samples. And these are unique samples that in many cases, who's going to come after you? The people who had the car crash film or, you know, Acme Films from 1959 is not, hello, listen, we don't want you to use that because, you know, you're stealing from us. Well, you're not. However, it's more legit now when you actually have to show the pictures involved, right? And there are human beings that are in there. So now you, it's really advanced, but I know you initially formed a relationship with BFI, but the other thing that I think is really important to talk about is that there's also American things in there.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, my and our understanding of the American material that we've used is that it comes from one sort of very specific source, which is the Perlinger Archives, based in San Francisco, I do believe. Yeah. And I've been in touch with Rick Perlinger as well, and you know, he seems to be behind what we're doing and seems to be approving of it, which is great. And it's under kind of a different Creative Commons license than the rest of the Internet Archive, which is that it's a Creative Commons that you're free to do what you want commercially, as well as for kind of, you know, educational whatever with credit. So we think we're pretty clear on that. I mean, we're not, you know, I might give the impression that we're slightly sort of blasé about various things, but when it comes to that, you know, we really try hard to pay respect and credit where it's due, and certainly wouldn't want to be seen to be just kind of pilfering without any kind of you know, due diligence and care, I suppose.
Of course, now you have the embarrassment of riches of now your email box is filled up with every human being who thinks they've got a funny sound that they pulled off of YouTube.
Yeah, I couldn't comment on that one. we get a lot of suggestions for songs. I mean, some of
you can save yourself here and just tell people exactly what you're looking for, and then
yeah, well, you know, sometimes the trouble is you never really.
Except they wouldn't really know even if you told them.
Well, you don't know always what you're looking for. You know, we got asked last year by two Dutch gents. You know, yes. do you want to write two songs about Elfstedentocht, the world's largest ice skating marathon, and you know. It's certainly something I would never have gone about doing, you know, off my own bat, I suppose. So it was that kind of stuff. I think you just got you know, it's a good position to be in when people are starting to come to you saying, "Could you do something with this?" Rather than you having to go cap in hand to various different companies saying, "Is it all right if we use this for this?"
So Everest, there's now different pictorials to go with that have just come out. And there's a definitive style there. And in some ways, it's really cool. And in some ways, it's really creepy. And I think that that's probably appropriate given the subject matter, isn't it? Because Everest is this fascinating thing that so many people have not gotten to where they're supposed to get to.
Yeah. I mean, the kind of the two stories, I suppose, the original video very much and the song itself are about the 1953 expedition and the film The Conquest of Everest, but the kind of the reversioned animation is much more about 1924 when things went much worse for the sort of main protagonists, and yeah, it's nice to kind of give it a different spin and also do something a lot more kind of abstract than what we've done so far. And I think it works. We still play the original video live, and I don't think that'll change. But it's nice to kind of be able to explore these other ways of presenting the music and kind of removing it from being so tightly linked to the visuals.
So I just laughed because you notice what I'm wearing. I actually own these, and I did not wear. I wore them because it'll make for the great PR shot afterwards. But I actually own them because I bought a couple of pair when I go to the Sundance Film Festival, and it's really kick-ass cold. There's nothing like a good pair of corduroys, and I remember that when I was a kid. But let's clear this up. You before that Who guy and the bow tie, you've been at this a while. Your choice of attire, I mean, you know, as it says in that, you know, the new generation, right? You didn't choose this purposely to be geeky. You chose it because you just liked it, right?
It's a passion. It's a lifelong passion. You know, corduroy, literally, cloth of the king, and it couldn't be a closer fitting name. You know, it couldn't be a more apt name.
Have you found an industrial film on the making of corduroy?
Well, I did amazingly find that sample that's in the Now Generation, cotton corduroy, the fabric woven for the Now Generation. Yes. And it's, you know, when I found that, I nearly fell off my chair.
That was as good as it gets. I want to know more about the whole idea of films that are pro-British war, or anything that people put out as propaganda. You know, because I grew up with the propaganda, and anything that's protest is propaganda because it's designed. I have a degree in rhetoric, so I know these things really well. You know, so propaganda is not good or bad. Propaganda is just propaganda. But propaganda encouraging people to go to war is pretty freaky stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I think you've got to be really careful with how you use it. And you just got to be very careful. Full stop, I suppose. I don't think in the case of The First of the Few, I don't think that's necessarily encouraging people to go to war. I think it was much more a kind of, like a lot of British propaganda, I suppose, kind of trying to bolster British kind of morale from the pounding they were taking in all kinds of departments, I suppose, and from being on their own in the war, in Europe until around about 1942, when the Americans very kindly came over and started helping us out. Well, militarily, they were helping financially much longer before that, but yeah.
We take a while to actually, you know, do the... We're willing to do the money, but the labor part, it takes a while.
Well, you got there in the end, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it kind of helped the end result, which was good. So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.